Hello and welcome to Political Contessa. This is Jennifer Nassour, and I am your Political Contessa. But you had, at least you had some bright people, right? You had Kevin McCarthy, you had Kathy McMorris Rodgers, you had Steve Scalise, you had people who actually knew what they were doing. And so now they're out. And now Mike Johnson is. I was like, you go through all the people who are going to run. Okay, Steve Scalise. I'm like, that's awesome. He's a great guy. He's smart. He's been there. He knows what he's doing. He has a good reputation. Nope, he's gone. You like whittle down, you get to Mike Johnson. It's like, well, he definitely wasn't my first pick,
Right.
but God bless the guy. And he got through. He was elected. And then, holy crap.
Welcome to Political Contessa. I'm Jennifer Nassour, and this show is here to support your interests in center-right politics, policy, and breaking news. Listen in and discover how to awaken your inner ideal candidate. And if you're ready, how you can jump in and change the world as a runner or a supporter. Welcome to Political Contessa. If you or a friend have ever considered running, or you know a woman who should, I've got something just for you. My quick guide called Secrets from the Campaign Trail. It will show you 5 signs to tell you you're ready to enter the political arena. To get these tips and learn about all new podcast episodes and ways to get involved, head over to politicalcontessa.com.
I am so excited to have with me on a new guest who has not been on the show before. I actually got to meet this wonderful, brilliant young woman when I was campaigning for Nikki Haley. And the best part about campaigns, if you have never been on a campaign before, is that you get to meet so many different and interesting people that are outside of your world. And you never know who you become friends with and who ends up, I don't know, coming on your podcast one day. So with me today, I have Brittany Martinez. Brittany is a political strategist. She now just started her own shop called Espina & Co., but she has had a career working in the House of Representatives. I'm going to get to that in a little bit. Deputy Director of Hispanic Media for the RNC. She's a graduate of right here in Massachusetts, got an MPA from the Harvard Kennedy School. And I am so excited. We were out campaigning together and ended up being on TV, door knocking in sub-zero temperatures. And it just is my pleasure to have Brittany on with me on Political Contessa. So welcome, Brittany.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's awesome to have you. And I hope that you will be a repeat guest because when we were out campaigning, I felt like we just were speaking the exact same language. We had a lot of the same issues. And I don't mean political issues. I mean structural issues. Yeah. And so hopefully you'll be a repeat guest. But so you are... when we were talking, I don't even know where to start because I remember talking to you and hearing what your job was and when you left your job. So I'm going to let you tell our audience.
Yeah.
What were you doing right before I met you?
So right before I met you, I was the California Communications Director for then Speaker McCarthy. I had worked for him for 5 years and was with him when he was ousted as Speaker of the House, which I'm sure we'll get into more detail on that. So I was just fresh off of that, trying to figure out exactly what to do next, looking to just kind of work a job as I always had, and then decided to pivot into something else, Espina & Co., as you mentioned. And apologies if you can hear my cat in the background. She's shuffling with some toys on the floor.
That's but fine. Yeah. I have dogs. They bark.
But yes, I was with him for 5 years. And obviously, when someone is removed from the Speaker of the House role, the way that it was for him. He was the first in history. It was quite a traumatic moment professionally and trying to figure out what to do after that. And so happy to go into greater detail, but that's sort of a very surface level introduction, I guess, to my most recent Hill role, the most traumatizing one, too.
I want you to expand on this because this, I have been working in politics, whether it's been on the campaign side or the legislative side for, or the executive side for the last over 30 years, which ages me. So I was an embryo when I first started, but I had never seen anything like that. I mean, that was historic and crazy, cuckoo crazy. Now, let me just set the stage from my perspective, right? As a political strategist looking into this, right? And a political analyst looking into this. So you have the Republicans have the majority in the House, and we don't have the White House and we don't have the Senate. So you have one body by a very slim majority. Okay, that's all factually correct, right? So, by the way, just as an FYI, history, because no one remembers history and history back to 2022. I'm going to make this like small little history bits because people forget so quickly. 2022 was supposed to be, FYI, in when the party in power, it has both houses, then there is a generally a gigantic swing to the other side in at least one house. It looked as if that would happen, that there would be a red wave. Instead, we got like a red trickle. I don't know what to even call it. It was like a red little ripple, a red little something. Like you're staying on the beach and you're like, ooh, that just tickled my toes kind of thing. It was definitely not a wave. And so Republicans are barely holding on. And we would like to win the White House in 2024. Of course, who our candidate was that we wanted to win is was different at the time for everyone, but we were hoping to win the White House. And so now what happens is a bunch of insurgents go off and say, we want to get rid of Kevin McCarthy because he is doing what he was elected to do. He was elected to sit at the table and to negotiate for good policy for the country, correct? Like for the entire country, not just for the minority of the Republican Party, but for the country. And so, in order to do that, you need to have a broad swath of interests that are sitting there, not just people who think like you and not people who think polar opposite of you, but everyone, right? And the majority then rules. Is that all sounds correct, right? Okay. I just wanted to set the table and now it's yours, all yours.
I mean, so if folks recall back when he was running for speaker at the beginning of January 2023, it took about a week for him to actually clinch that win, 15 votes. And it was a vote, I think, ultimately at like 1 in the morning, the one that was the one that helped him become speaker, or was the one where he became speaker. And that threat of the motion to vacate had been thrown in his face from the very beginning. So as staff, we joked, and if you work in politics, you probably have a dark sense of humor to some capacity, but we often joke that this motion to vacate is going to come to the floor at some point. Being a staffer, though, and having worked for McCarthy for as long as I had, and had, excuse me, having seen him pull off so many miraculous wins, and back when we were in the minority, and this is getting a little bit wonky there, but when we were in the beginning of 2019, and he had just become minority leader. He had been the majority leader in the House the term before. In the minority, one of the final procedural legislative tools that the minority has is the MTR. And so, what that means is like their final push to change a piece of legislation, which you often do not win because they're procedural. and the opposite side. So like Republicans, for example, we were in the minority, they will vote in favor of the MTR, whereas the Democrats will vote against it. It's just that's how it works. And we won eight that term, which was really never seen before, because again, they're procedural rules. And when you are the speaker, right, as Nancy Pelosi was then, she would have just said, like, just always vote no. And that way you can always say you vote no. I always vote no's on the MTRs. So he had won eight of those. We didn't win the majority for the House in 2022 the way that we thought we did, but we were still able to pull it off. So he won the 15 speaker votes, right? And there were so many naysayers then. I remember Jake Sherman tweeting, like, that week, there are only a few things that I'm clear about this week. One of those is that Kevin McCarthy will never become speaker. I mean, there's all those naysayers and the reporters who think they know better than everyone else and are God's gift to politics and political discourse, who are so obnoxious. So that was a long way of saying, even though I myself also thought that a motion to vacate would ultimately come to the floor at some point, given his history and who I saw him to be, I, one, thought he would defeat it, or if not, that he would run for speaker again. So when we were pulled into our office shortly after and told that's not what was going to happen, I was very shocked. And I think a lot of folks on our team were shocked too.
It had to be the most surreal experience.
Yeah,
totally. That had happened.
Totally.
I mean, you went through all those rounds of voting just, you know, earlier in the year. And which was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. I think not embarrassing. And I don't mean that as embarrassing for McCarthy. No. I mean it just embarrassing for the party not to be able to get their shit together and to figure out, hey, listen, like go to people that you have a relationship with. And here's the thing. I mean, living in Massachusetts, right? And you lived in California, like you get this. When you live in a state that has politics other than your politics, you have to understand that you have friends who don't see the same way. And how are you going to come together in the middle? And so for it to go that far to begin with. Now, okay, so here we are, barely won the House. McCarthy is, after all those ballots, elected as speaker. Now it's October, right? It was the end of October. And they vote him out. And there were, what, eight or nine Republicans that went rogue?
Yeah, it was eight Republicans, the Hateful Eight, the Gates Eight. We have a couple of names for them. But yes, it was eight Republicans and all the Democrats, which of course the Democrats are going to vote against him. Last year, Mike Johnson, which I guess we can get into in a little bit. It's convenient timing that we're chatting, given what just happened with him on the floor this week. But yes, so it was the eight. And it's funny because I didn't think this then necessarily, again, because Kevin is able to pull the rabbit out of his hat constantly. But when I look at where we are as a party now in the House, especially, I don't think we're going to keep the House. I think Democrats are going to win the House. I think we have a really good chance of flipping the Senate. But when it comes to the House, I think we're going to lose the House because it has been just so chaotic, this Congress. And I think that seed was from when the 15 votes happened, because it was already, I mean, so much civil discourse, which is a good thing. But I think it was beyond that. I think it was just people being like ornery old people, because so many people in Congress are old. And I think it was people trying to make a name for themselves, right? There were some freshmen who, during the rounds of voting in the 15, didn't support him, even though he'd like helped fundraise for them and stuff like that, right? And so I think that sort of laid the groundwork then to where we are now as a Congress in the House. And again, I think we're going to lose the House this November.
I think we are too. And I think honestly, it was this play, right? The ending of this play was determined once McCarthy was ousted, because I think it just showed that the Republicans in Congress really can't get their shit together. They really are not doing what they need to do for, and I'm sorry if you're someone I know who's in Congress and you listen to this, but it's true. I mean, it's unfortunate, but they're not doing what they need to do for their constituency and for the country. They're doing what is going to kind of get them Twitter clicks, going to get them on TikTok, going to, it's more of a popularity contest. I thought Nancy Mace being part of that was disgusting. I mean, you sold your soul to the devil and it was very clear that you did it. And Matt Gaetz, I mean, okay, seriously, let's talk about the morality of that guy, right? So he's a creep, right? And so anyone who signed on to go along with what he wanted to do definitely has some morality issues as far as I'm concerned, right? And so I almost feel like we deserve to lose the House because of their antics. And in order for them to be taken seriously, they need to stop what's going on. Okay, so let's go into, it's a perfect segue into Mike Johnson. So he's running. Now, McCarthy was, okay, fine. Like Kevin McCarthy, everyone knows who he is and he's out there. And but you had, at least you had some bright people, right? You had Kevin McCarthy, you had Kathy McMorris Rodgers, you had Steve Scalise, you had people who actually knew what they were doing. Yeah. And they, so now they're out. And now Mike Johnson is, I was like, you go through all the people who are going to run. Okay, Steve Scalise. I'm like, that's awesome. He's a great guy. He's smart. He's been there. He knows what he's doing. He has a good reputation. Nope, he's gone. You like whittle down, you get to Mike Johnson. It's like, well, he definitely wasn't my first pick, but God bless the guy. And he got through, he was elected. And then, holy crap. What is going on there?
Yeah.
I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, is it that she just thinks that she should be the speaker of the United, like she's not just the speaker of the House, but she, I don't know what that woman is trying to do.
Right.
Other than cause chaos. So what's your assessment? Let's talk about this now.
Yeah, no, she's a chaos agent for sure. What I will say though, is I have a really soft spot for her, even though I think she's a clown legislatively, because she was always so nice to our staff. Like, and I think
really
members have such big egos and you just can be dismissive and stuff like that. And she was always just very kind to our staff. And so for me, that goes a long way. Now, I don't agree with her like on any policy, and she says some crazy out there stuff all the time, but at least that I can give her a compliment on that I always appreciated that. Yeah, I have no idea what's going on with her. I have no idea what's going on in Congress. I don't think they know what's going on, even at the highest level with Johnson's team. And I don't mean that as a slap in the face to them. I think it's just so much unstructured chaos for the sake of chaos, that they're probably just, you know, constantly having to turn their head one way or another and see like what where the next problem is coming from. Yeah, with MTG, that girl, I don't know what she's doing. That ma'am, that woman, I have no idea. But I will say, I'll applaud Mike Johnson. I think he had, it wasn't this week, was it last week or maybe the week before? I think he had a legacy week. It was a week that passed the Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan aid, and he went to Colombia. And I think that was huge for him, particularly as he'd been pushing for Ukraine aid since he first got sworn in and everything that happened with Israel. So Kevin was vacated October 3rd. October 7th was when when the attacks with Hamas first began. So just a few days later, and you also have to keep in mind, we didn't have a speaker for 22 days. So Congress was virtually frozen, unable to really move. And this is a tangent on that, but I believed it then, I believe it now. This was obviously a coordinated attack that they'd been working on for a while. But when the world's police, or the most powerful body in the world, our country, the US, is literally frozen. Their Congress cannot move on legislation until a new speaker is elected. And the Senate can't do anything either, right? We need both. We need both. I'm sure that they also were like, hey, this is, if they were unsure, like they probably decided this is a good time to move since they can't do anything anyway. So I'll always believe that. And I think, obviously, personally, I really hate the Hateful Eight for what they did to Kevin and what happened with their team. But like from a bigger perspective and from a national security level, it was dangerous, so dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really need to be held accountable to that. But anyway, yes. Yeah, so I think Johnson had a legacy building week 2 weeks ago or whenever that was. It's tough. Kevin had a slim majority. I think the most, like, I think the biggest majority we had was 8 people, and now it's 1. I mean, how could you move on anything, right? You have to work together, which is why his removal, which came right after the government was funded, which was both Republicans and Democrats voting for it, as it should be, because we need to work in a bipartisan fashion, that he got vacated right after. And by the way, the vote before him getting removed was actually a bill that is brought to the floor only with the speaker's approval, obviously. And it was Nancy Mace's bill.
That's just really disgusting.
And she's like, you're not being transparent or whatever. You're not being transparent and all these secret things and backdoor conversations. Like, you, your bill literally just came to the floor prior to this. You clown.
Right.
You clown that everyone hates you, all her staffers. And I don't know if you saw today, but an article came out with, I believe, the Daily Mail, where she was like, oh, they, well, $1 million they wasted. And like, you've lost like 40 staffers in a couple of years. Like, it's a you problem at this point.
It's a you problem. She is the problem. She is the problem. It is really, so I wasn't sure about Johnson. I felt like, you know, maybe he was part of the problem caucus, right? Not the problem solvers caucus, but the problem caucus.
Yeah,
difference there. And I have been really pleasantly surprised with his leadership. I think that he's solid, right? He's calm. He seems calm. He seems solid. And even though he's incredibly conservative, listen, your own views and the views that you bring there from your district are different than, again, when you become the, whether you're president or you're the Speaker of the House or you're the Senate leader, whatever it is that you are, you are in charge of that body and that institution and making sure that it functions toward democracy, making sure that we are running all trains on time. Everyone's rowing in the same direction. And yes, you are entitled to have your own views. But at the end of the day, what are we doing for the American people who, by the way, just as an FYI, pay their salaries?
Right.
Like, I don't know, taxpayer money goes to pay their salaries. Like, that kind of feels like some sort of accountability, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I think that Johnson and what he's been doing, the actions that he's been taking, the way that he's able to negotiate with the Democrats and gain their trust and their respect is something I really, truly admire. And so I think that the aid bill that passed was the right thing to do. We being stagnated, the national security risk at that time in October, it was scary. It felt scary for anyone who actually understands government and politics and the inner workings. It definitely felt scary. But, you know, we at, and people, I'm sorry if you hate that I'm using these terms, but not you, but, you know, the listener, but we used to be a superpower. Right? It was us and Russia, and people around the globe, our allies, our friends, looked to us as the parent who was going to come in, as the big brother, big sister who was going to come in and be able to protect them from the bullies around the world.
Right.
And when we don't, and when we forget that used to be our position, and yes, the world changed, but still, our allies still view us as the person who's good, the one who's going to come in, the country who's going to come in and stand by their side. And listen, this isn't a forever deal. This is a, we're helping you out of a bind. And whether it's arms, whether it's some cash, whether it's troops, we're going to be there to help you in some sort of way. And the fact that the thought that we would just say, well, good luck to you. I mean, Nikki had great sound bites on this, which was, if Russia getting Ukraine is only the first step, right? They're going into Ukraine, then they're going to Poland, they're going to the Baltics, and then watch what happens after that. And same thing with Israel. If you enjoy Western civilization, if you enjoy our lifestyle and women, you don't want to run around in burqas or not be allowed out of your house or be educated or drive cars, then, you know, let's see what happens to Israel. Those are our friends, and we're supposed to make sure that our friends don't have the crap beaten out of them.
Yeah.
So I give Johnson a lot of credit for understanding that politics needs to be played. And for anyone who is in office who doesn't understand that when you're elected to office, it's politics and you need to negotiate.
Yeah. No, I agree 100% with everything that you just said, especially when you only have a one seat majority. Like, what else are you supposed to do? I mean, you can either get nothing done, or you can work together in a collaborative manner and get some of your priorities, right?
Yes,
Not
absolutely.
Perfect, but neither is life.
It's not perfect, but by the way, there's also an election season coming up. So stop fighting, at least temporarily.
Yeah.
And again, everyone row in the right direction together and say, let's just get some stuff done. Let's make sure we all get reelected. Let's make sure that we get some other people on. We're not going to have a wave. But at least we can try to say, hey, in those districts where you have encampments on your college campuses and you are not saying anything about the anti-Semitic rhetoric that's going on in your districts, then that person should be out and elect someone new. The people who have been in office for 30 and 40 years, out, elect someone new. And at least, like, keep regenerating the blood of Congress, but they're just not doing it. And I am much more hopeful on the Senate side. So let's pivot a little bit now to our political analysts and strategists sides of us. But I had the pleasure of meeting Tim Sheehy, who is running for Senate in Montana, who, by the way, just to be clear here, I live in Massachusetts. I'm a native New Yorker. I leave this coast and I go visit friends in California and then I come back. Like, I have not been to Montana. I have not even been there. So but I had an opportunity to meet this guy and I said, you know what? I'm always open to meeting good Republicans who, you know, or candidates who put their names on a ballot and are running a tough race. He's running against John Tester, who is a very progressive Democrat who's been in office for a very long time. When Montana used to be blue collar meant blue collar, and now the Democrats have left those groups and we've kind of flip-flopped, and it's like they only deal with the elitist population. But okay, so I getting off track here. But anyway, Tim Sheehy, great guy, just smart Navy SEAL, former Navy SEAL. His wife was also in active military duty, father of four kids, guy who started a business. I just have so much respect for this guy. Yeah. And that the Democrats are spending 10 to 1 to save Tester in this race, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then there's Larry Hogan in Maryland, who is so similar to our former governor here in Massachusetts, to Charlie Baker, just a more moderate Republican. And listen, if you're a Republican in the center of the country, you might not agree with Larry Hogan, but he was incredibly, next to Charlie Baker, he was the most popular governor in the country. He did a great job with Maryland. He is very well liked. He is running for U.S. Senate, and God bless that man, because between him and Sheehy, I think it just changes the balance of power in the Senate, right?
I love Larry Hogan. I think he's great. I also keep accidentally calling him Harry Logan. These are both first names, right?
Well, so I want to call him Hulk Hogan because.
But I know which one. I know which one. If I lived in Maryland, I'd know which one to vote for. But, no, you're right. I think he's great. And I don't know if Maryland is considered a blue state. I think of it as a blue state. I think maybe it's gotten a little bit more purple, but think about it. I mean, it's two Republicans in blue states who are so popular. And what someone who's from California, right? Like, we can never even get a Republican on the ballot to that point because we have, I call it a jungle primary. They say that it's not technically a jungle primary. It's a top two primary. But oftentimes you have two Democrats who are moving on to the general just statewide. I mean, congressional race is everything. And so I think that's BS. I think if we had more of a traditional primary in California, you'd see more Republicans actually get the chance to like talk about the important things that we need to be working on, especially because California has gone down the drain over, excuse me, under Newsom's leadership over the last few years. But anyway,
I can't. No, it's fine. We can actually talk about that for a second, because there are, what, over 40 million people in California, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
we have the highest homelessness rate. We at the 25% of the country's unhoused homeless population lives in California. And I think something about like 50% of all homeless in the US live in California.
That's insane. Well, I mean, the weather is beautiful.
Right. I would understand
I'm
why.
I'm just going to say, for anyone homeless out there who's listening, don't move to Massachusetts. This is the worst place to live because it's freezing all the time. Today, it is May. We have a high of 54 degrees today. I mean, it's like you don't want to be living here. So California, at least you live on the beautiful beaches there. But Newsom has destroyed California, sadly. And I do love California as a state. I have friends and family there. And it's really unfortunate what's happened. And that's what you get under that leadership. I'll tell you, it's a little bit funny. So maybe in a state with over 40 million people, it would be a different outcome in a primary than it is in a state like Massachusetts. We have under 7 million people. We had a ballot initiative that they dubbed the millionaire's tax. So of course, when you start taxing people over $1 million, it wasn't just individuals, it was also businesses. Yeah. People start leaving. So God knows where we've lost about 40,000 young people between 25 and 40, because why would you want to stay here? And so as our numbers keep going down, our Republican primary has always been interesting, right? Because you have in our gubernatorial primary in 2022, you had the guy who has been a perennial loser who ended up winning the primary. And then, of course, goes on to the general election. And the Democrats are like, we're not even wasting a dime on this guy, right? Because, and so it's unfortunate. So we do have the traditional primary. And at the end of the day, it has been that the cuckoo bird ends up winning the primary. And then the Democrats don't take us seriously and people continue to leave the Republican Party. So I don't really know where it's better. I will say one of the things that I notice, and I know that you probably notice too, is where are our voters? Why are people not coming out to vote? Because on Super Tuesday in Massachusetts, about 24% of our electorate actually voted in the presidential primary on Super Tuesday. What do you think, Brittany? Is it an issue of we need a national presidential primary day? So let me also preface this, and I'm really interested to hear what California does on this. Massachusetts, when we have a state primary, not Super Tuesday, but when we have a state primary, sometimes it's the day after Labor Day, and Labor Day switches all the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's the first Monday in September, but sometimes it's Monday, September 6th. Sometimes it's Monday, September 2nd. So our primary day sometimes follows Labor Day. Sometimes it comes before the Jewish holidays. Sometimes it comes after the Jewish holidays. It's never the same. So no one knows when to vote. And then it's very close up to the lead up to the general. So what do you think on a national presidential primary? And maybe there's a carve out for Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. Just like, give
keep
them
it fun to keep it interesting.
Yeah, keep it fun and interesting. I still don't understand the caucus process. So, I mean, let's just keep that in there because
they can have it for the rest of us.
But for the rest of us, I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I know I've heard the argument made before, like moving the election to even a weekend or like making it a national holiday so people don't have to work. Of course, some people would still have to work. But I think if we did something like that, it would be great. I think we'd have better voter turnout. I don't know why it hasn't been done. I'm sure there's arguments for why not to do that. But I think it's so important to vote in the primaries too. I don't know what the stats are this year versus the last presidential year, but I'm curious if it's just also like voter fatigue and just being tired, and it's probably going to be Biden and Trump again. Back earlier in the year when people just weren't sure and just not caring, and they're both so old, and someone in the 80s, someone about to be 80. If I wasn't involved in politics, I don't know that I would feel the need to go do that because I'd be burnt out. And I do this for a living. And obviously, just watching out before we got on this podcast call, I was watching the news. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Right. So I can't imagine folks back home who just don't do this for a living just being like, please stop talking to me. I don't
Oh,
want your
yeah.
phone calls. I don't want your text messages, your emails. I'm so over it. So I think it's just people are tired. And especially because it's a Biden Trump matchup again, it makes it a little more boring, I think.
Oh, a hell of a lot more boring. I mean, I think the most interesting thing that I saw was RFK Jr. had a parasite on his brain, right? Like that's the most interesting part of this presidential primary, this presidential election cycle that I've seen, because Biden is not going to debate Trump. Trump is in court. I mean, and who the hell wants to hear the seedy testimony,
Oh
right,
my
of
God.
Stormy Daniels and how embarrassing, and God, let's just say Melania, and like if that woman deserves, I don't know what her prenup is, but she deserves to renegotiate it once again.
I agree. I will say though, I wish it was televised because I'm watching the reporters talk about it who were in the courtroom. So if it was
Right.
televised, oh my God, that'd make
Oh, it's like daytime TV.
yeah,
It's like
crazy TV.
better than any soap opera anyone could ever watch. But you know, I think that there's a lot of 70% of the country doesn't want Biden and Trump again, or and 60% think both of them are too old. And then you have RFK, who tries to act like he's young, but he's also in his 70s. And I think there's going to be a lot of voter apathy. I think the only thing that might change the voter apathy a little bit, and again, as you and I know, 6 months in politics is like, this is like dog years, right? Every month in
Literally, that's
politics
this
is like a
year.
dog year. And so anything could change. But I think two hot issues right now, on top of the immigration, on top of the economy, which of course are issues. I think if you're Jewish and you continue to watch the anti-Semitism, or if you're anyone who was raised with any sort of respect for other people and other cultures and other religions, and especially for Jews and what had happened during the Holocaust, this is bothersome. And I think if you are on a college campus, so you're n maybe not as connected, but you're on a college campus and you see the encampments, and there were state troopers pulling the encampments apart yesterday at MIT, at Harvard, what's been going on at major big universities. Then you see the kids at UNC Chapel Hill that have to grab the American flag before it falls on the ground. And I think maybe even though these kids have not been taught civics the way that they should be, they're getting a lesson in civics really quickly. And so I'm interested to see if this impacts them going out to vote and gets them out to vote, even though they wouldn't have. So I find it really interesting. And then there's a population of, we see Latino men and Black men are looking at Trump in higher numbers than they were in 2020. Does the immigration issue affect those voters? So even though I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of voter apathy because of the age and the boredom of these two, other than their family scandals, I think that there are so many other things at play here. And it depends if this all subsides over the summer, the kids go home, they're not in college, they come back, it's different. Maybe that all shakes out. I don't know.
I agree. I mean, I can see this really mobilizing some of the younger voters who are in school right now, especially those like I was thinking about this the other day, and the same kids who are losing their opportunity to graduate, like in the big fields, were the same kids who lost their opportunity to graduate from high school
Yes.
because of COVID. And so it's
Yes.
just like these poor kids lose two graduations, and those are just such special moments. Like your parents put it up in your house, your childhood home, and it's just it makes me really sad for them. I know that if I was one of those students, I would be so angry, and it would probably mobilize me to want to do something. And to your point, yeah, I think with the summer, you said this earlier. I mean, people have short attention spans, and they like tend to forget, and like history, even though it'll only have been a few months prior, like they might forget. And then maybe around October 3rd, who knows if that'll like rile up any feelings. But I can't imagine those kids and those encampments being taken down, and then those kids coming back after summer and then just like picking back up where they left off. Who knows?
Right.
This generation is very interesting to
It's very
me.
interesting. I don't know if they're that motivated, but who knows? I mean, maybe. I'm not really sure. I find the whole thing fascinating, but Brittany, it has been so fun. I could sit and we could just go bounce from one topic to it. This is like the perfect type A conversation, right? You just bounce from one A
No,
one thing to the next, but
I love it.
it's so fun talking to you, and I'm so excited for your new venture. So before I let you go, why don't you let my listener know a little bit about Espina and Co?
Yeah, and you pronounced it perfectly. So, Espina and Co., I am bilingual. I grew up in a Spanish-speaking household and English too, but with my grandparents, I never really learned English. And so, Espina in Spanish has a couple meanings. And so, one of them is thorns, because as a communicator, you have to deal with thorny topics. But the other one is spine, because I feel like a lot of our politicians have lost their backbone, and Co., because they've lost their hearts and their souls and their brains. And so, I just wanted to kind of be cute with it and have it be meaningful to me. And so that's where I landed. But yes, after everything that happened with McCarthy and thinking about what do I do next, I went through regular interview processes and decided this isn't for me. I have never been a fan of Trump, and I just will no longer work for someone who's in lockstep with him, particularly if it's just like a random rank and file member who's a freshman. Like, I do not, you're not important enough for me to want to support you. I'm sorry. And so, yes, now I get to work with clients and from all different parts of, I guess, the political realm, nonprofits dealing with some international issues, foreign relations, and of course, some policy stuff. So that's been fun, and I look forward to continue doing it. This is brand new, so hopefully I can make enough money to survive, but I think I'll be okay.
I have full faith in you. I think you're amazing, and I am so
You're amazing.
excited for you to have this new adventure and venture and to build it out yourself. And it's super empowering to women for you to pick yourself up by the bootstraps and start this. So, congratulations.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And thanks for
You're
having me. This was a lot of fun.
of course, and hopefully you'll come back on.
Yes. Oh, and I remembered MTR stands for motion to recommit,
Oh, there we go. We were
if
talking and I was going to Google it. I was like, nope, I want to listen to her. She's so interesting.
Motion to recommit. Yes.
See, you know what? It gives me hope that it's not me and my old brain getting brain fog, that you also can't remember things.
I just have a lot of thoughts. There's a lot happening in these brains.
Like I said, when you're type A and you're always going, there's just a lot going on all the time. Well, Brittany, good luck with everything, and hopefully you'll come back on.
Yes, absolutely. Would love to.
Excellent. And thank you, my listener. I always appreciate you listening in to Political Contessa. I'm Jennifer Nassor. That was Brittany Martinez. Thank you so much for listening to us. Please stay happy, healthy, and safe.
Thanks so much for listening to Political Contessa. For all the ways to listen and to get the inside scoop on what's happening in center-right politics for women like us, head over to politicalcontessa.com.